Chapter 2 Davin had to force himself to keep from rubbing the gashes on his chest. They itched and burned, and the steady, jostling rhythm of the horse seemed to inflame them with each hoofbeat forward. He opened his long hunting coat to let the chill breeze numb the discomfort on his chest, but he paid for it with shivers. The way home to Frostbourne Manor led him out of the wild and through the township of Canton, the warm lantern lights of its houses edging through the cracks in shutters. During his father's wasteful tenure, Canton had nearly gone to ruin, but Davin had revived it once his father had died, even going so far as to plough and harvest with the common folk until they could prosper on their own. As he passed the modest general store to his left, the door cracked open, Mr. Hubery's head poking through the opening, wild grey hair catching the breeze. He had suffered greatly during Frostborn's poverty, but Davin had persuaded him to stay on until the goods and the money started flowing again. It had cost the man much in prosperity and comfort, but for his sacrifices for Frostborn, the Queen had recommended Mr. Thewbury for presentation to the Eternal Flame. He was now flame-touched, the only one in Frostborn Davin knew of. Davin nodded in his direction.
"Is that you, milord?"
Mr. Thewbury said, stepping out onto the porch in his bedclothes.
"It's right cold for an evening ride. Why don't you come in and warm your blood with a little tea and brandy? It's been a while since you visited, and little Jilly loves your stories."
Jilly was his granddaughter, a bright girl barely up to his waist. She did love a story, and the tea and brandy sounded nice, but his wounds wouldn't let him delay. "That's very kind of you, Mr. Thewbury," Davin said, slowing up a little and angling the horse toward the house. "But I've urgent business at Frostbourne and must return without delay. Give Jilly my best."
"May the Eternal Flame bless you, sir,"
Mr. Thewbury said, raising a hand in salute. Davin could just make out the tiny, flame-shaped scar on the man's palm, and wondered if it had hurt when the Eternal Flame had branded him. An icy breeze numbed Davin's chest, goosebumps sprouting on his skin. The winter wouldn't hold back for much longer. Frostbourne was a minor estate situated in the extreme northwest of the kingdom, as far from the capital city of Belshire as one could get and still claim citizenship in the country. Its northern locale meant cold and snow paid Frostbourne their unwelcome visits rather sooner than everywhere else, and, like bad company, left long after their welcome had worn off. Once out of Canton, Davin crested a small hill, the lights burning in the windows of Frostbourne Manor blooming into view.
"Just a little farther, dear Cyril," he mentally urged his horse.
His manor house sat just outside the dark boughs of the spruce-filled Windhill Forest, and was surrounded by a wall the height of a man to keep out direwolves, short-faced bears, and the occasional mammoth that sometimes ventured out of the wood hungry for an easy meal. 6 mighty blue spruce trees obscured much of the outer architecture of Frostbourne from distant eyes, one of Lady Carver's chief complaints after she had taken residence at the manor. It took Davin nearly 2 solid weeks of argument to convince her that the thick, needled branches shielded the house from the wicked blasts of the winter winds, and that he would not cut them down under any circumstances. Davin sighed as he neared his home. Was he really willing to give up everything for her? Give everything to her? Strangely, he felt ready to do just that. That his despair had so poisoned his soul that it had killed his attachment to Frostbourne surprised him. But then again, that same despair had murdered just about everything. His pride was gone. His hope for brighter days and simple joys was gone. His sense of humour was gone. After he had rescued his estate, his marriage was to be, in his own mind, the crowning achievement in the recovery of Frostbourne. And when the marriage failed, the rest did as well by association. It was as if an artist had painted a masterpiece and smudged it with a final stroke. Wolves deep within the spruce-covered hills bellowed a mournful call, and Cyril whickered nervously. "It's all right, boy," Davin soothed. "Look, we're there." After dark, the front gate was shut and locked, but the warm light spilling out between the shutter slats of the guardhouse signalled that Carter had not yet retired. The glow from the guardhouse window played on the 2 tooled copper flames set into the stonework on either side of the gate. Normally, Davin would unlock the gate with his own key, but he thought it best to move as little as possible until he was nearer some place he could collapse. He stopped at the gate and whistled, turning his eyes to the sky while he awaited the gatekeeper's service. The flurries and snow had quit almost as soon as he had mounted the nervous Serral and headed home after the sabercat attack. The movement of the ragged clouds had slowed, gaping holes revealing a deep black sky sequined with brilliant stars. The guardhouse door banged open, revealing Carter buttoning up his blue jacket over his white shirt and trousers. Davin grinned. Carter was the son of a local farmer, and an utter rascal. His father, one of Davin's tenants, had begged Davin to give Carter some position to help him throw off the child and take up the mantle of a man. But Davin had never employed a gatekeeper, though most other lords did. Frostborn had no problems with theft and poaching, and there were simply never enough visitors to justify having someone sit in a house at the ready all day long. But as Davin eyed the thin young man with the tousled blonde hair and near-permanent smirk, he thought the posting had changed him. A little. The eyes still held that boyish hint of trouble, and there were people in Canton who still hated the lad for his history of pranks and tricks. Davin thought the completely improvised uniform he had insisted Carter wear had affected the most change, though having the less than commodious guardhouse as his own had no doubt helped. A change of clothes and situation could work marvels. Davin's newly hatched plan to free himself from his wife depended on that axiom.
"Starting to despair of you, Baron Carver," Carter said as he inserted the key into the lock and eyed the horse. "Nothing jump in front of your gun today, eh, my lord?"
"My rifle wasn't up to it today," Davin said, guiding his horse forward as the gate opened.
"Would you please run ahead and tell Saunders to meet me at the stables?"
"I will. No need for the please, though. You're the lord, remember,"
Carter said, a customary admonition for his lord when he was too polite.
"Lady Frostborn never says please. She understands the order of things."
"Just fetch him, Carter."
The lock clinked shut and the gatekeeper chuckled.
"That's more like it, Lord Carver. Much better."
Carter sprinted off toward the house, and Davin set Serral to a nice, steady walk, taking it slow to allow Saunders time to arrive. The horse snorted, a cloud of breath shooting into the night.
"Almost home, boy," Davin said, patting his neck. He was going to have to give up his horse.
That thought struck him like a falling tree. Serral had been his constant companion for years. The stable boy, Dantry, met him outside the stalls. He was a pudgy 12-year-old lad with a kind, round face.
"You all right, my lord?"
he said as he grabbed the reins.
"I've had better days, Dantry. Is Saunders here?"
"Coming, Davin!"
Saunders jogged as fast as his well-travelled bones would permit, buttoning his coat with knobby, knuckled hands. He had a bald pate with bushy sideburns running down into a full grey beard. Davin's aging steward was a transplant from the army where he had served as a supply officer and field medic. Too rough for the genteel houses of Belshire, Davin found him a perfect fit for the wilder environs of Frostborn, though Lady Carver could barely tolerate his outspoken and often irascible nature. Lord Carver found Saunders as frugal and farthing-hoarding as he himself had been during Frostborn's recovery. It had taken time, but Davin had trained enough of the military-mouthed man out of him to make him palatable to the rest of the house staff.
"Help me down, if you would, Saunders," Lord Carver asked.
"Help you down? What's wrong with you?"
Saunders asked, face screwed up suspiciously. Davin opened his coat, revealing the blood-soaked shirt.
"Flame and flood,"
he exclaimed, reaching up a hand.
"Did you take a fall?"
"No, no," Davin answered. "Get me inside. I'll need stitching up."
"I dare say so,"
Saunders agreed, slinging Lord Carver's arm over his shoulder.
"Bloody fool you are. Hunting alone is like running into battle with a bloody broom. Not to mention that your huntmaster is starting to think you mean to let him go with all your trips without him this fall. Let's get into the kitchen."
Saunders lifted the latch to the door near the stables and pulled Lord Carver inside the house. Ian, the cook, stared wide-eyed as the steward dumped his charge in a chair.
"Don't stand around, Ian," Saunders admonished. "Fetch Lord Carver a glass of wine. No, bring the whole bottle, the good vintage. I get some water boiling."
He turned to Davin.
"Let's get that shirt off you and see what we're dealing with here."
Struggling out of the coat and shirt, pulled and twisted the jagged tears in his flesh, breaking open the scabs and setting the blood funneling down his sternum to his belly.
"Those are good and ugly," Saunders said. "Shall I fetch the lady of the house so she can help minister to her lord?"
The last was said with enough sarcasm to cut through Lord Carver's pain. Leave her be, Saunders. Leave her be. Let's get this done as quickly as we can, please.
Saunders harumphed in disdain and deposited the soiled clothes on the table before cleaning the wounds. Ian returned later with the bottle and Lord Carver upturned it and drank deeply, wincing as Saunders daubed a cloth around the cuts. Ian stoked the embers in the stove and set fresh wood inside.
"It'll take a bit to get the water boiling," he said, worriedly eyeing the gashes. "It's all right, Ian," Saunders said. "We need the spirits to do their work on our reckless lord here before we get to the stitching. I've got to go find the alcohol and a needle. Make sure he doesn't fall out of the chair."
Exhaustion, wine, and sitting still had dulled the pain enough to where he thought he might just pass out. But Saunders returned and renewed his painful ministrations, straightening him in his chair and elevating his mind above the fog. First, his steward cleaned the gashes with a warm cloth from the water on the stove, which hurt plenty. But when he applied the alcohol, fire erupted on Davin's chest and he nearly fainted. He wiped the tears from his eyes while Saunders patted his shoulder.
"Remember the pain, my lord. It's a good remedy against future bouts of stupidity."
"Thank you, Saunders." The old man had taken the place of a father when Davin had hired him, adding the finishing touches to what the young lord already knew about hunting, shooting, and fighting. What Saunders lacked in manners, he more than made up for in practical wisdom. Leaving him would be hard, too.
"Another bottle of wine, Ian, quick," Saunders ordered. "He's going to really remember this part, drunk or sober."
Davin drank more while Saunders threaded the curved needle. This wasn't the first time he'd been patched up by his steward after his scrapes in the wilderness, but it was by far the most extensively he had ever been sliced up.
"This was done by a sabre cat, wasn't it?" Saunders speculated.
"Yes."
Saunders jabbed the needle in and pulled the thread through.
"And how did you get your sorry ass out of that one alive, my lord?"
Davin repressed a yell as Saunders jabbed the needle in again.
"Well, I... Is that you, Lord Carver?"
a voice said sweetly from behind him. Lady Carver sounding strangely happy. Davin craned his head around. She stood in the doorway of the kitchen, eyes on a letter in her hand. She perused it carefully. Lady Emile Carver was a beautiful thing, though pain-watered eyes distorted his vision of her. Coppery hair, green eyes, tall, pale. Everything men wanted. When they courted, she had often worn bright colours, but now she sported one of her many loose-fitting grey dresses, a dull blue ribbon around her waist offering the only dab of colour. Davin often thought she chose grey to indicate that she was half in mourning. "Soon, Emile, you can exchange it for black."
"I'm home," he said,
voice strained as Saunders resumed his gory work.
"Well, good. We just received a letter this afternoon from the Tarbos, inviting us to their Day of Farewell celebration. It's to be an entire week long. Balls and parties and plays for 7 days. Tell me we can go, Lord Carver. It could hardly be missed."
"Of course we'll go, Emile. We go every year."
"Very good. I shall write to inform them of our acceptance immediately."
She walked away without further comment, while Saunders stared angrily at her.
"For the love of the flame," he exclaimed incredulously. "You'd think she might notice that the steward is performing surgery on her husband in the kitchen. Your bloody shirt is seeing right bloody there."
"My back was turned to her."
"Your naked back,"
Saunders said, jabbing the needle in angrily, making Davin wince.
"I guess she assumes that you just walk into the kitchen and disrobe on a regular basis, then."
"Careful, Saunders."
"Sorry, my lord,"
he apologised.
"You defending her infuriates me so. If you had a proper wife, she would be here kissing your neck and holding your hand and sitting by your side and passing prayers into the fire until you were properly recovered. That beast of a woman has no proper affection."
"It's never good to talk about spring days to men in the dungeon," Davin mumbled dispiritedly.
"You could have all the spring days you wanted, Davin,"
Saunders pressed, pausing his ministrations.
"I know at least 3 women in Canton who would bathe you in sunshine and warm water until you couldn't remember winter anymore. Let me fetch one to care for you."
He had heard all of this 100 times before. The servants couldn't understand and never would. To the world, Emile was a proper woman
who had married against her nature. He knew why she had married him now. Her previous indiscretions stung him, especially since they led him to kill Viscount Cornton of Hightower in anger to defend her pretended honour, widowing his beautiful young wife. But still he ached for and loved Emile. Or maybe he just loved the idea of her he had formed when they courted. She had been so different then. Another needle pull yanked him out of the past. Saunders and Ian were discussing women they thought would fit his needs.
The widow Merriweather is only a year or two, well, maybe 5 years older than the master, Ian was saying. She's not as pretty as Lady Carver, but has a good disposition, and has a melon garden I'd love to get lost in, if you take my meaning.
Saunders nodded.
Not an entirely bad choice, but mark my words, she'd want back. The master needs someone who just wants to give. Lord Carver has given enough of his soul to that sour wench.
Davin's hand shot out and grabbed Saunders' wrist.
You watch your tongue, Saunders. No more about this mistress business and no more disrespect for Lady Carver. Do you understand me, old man?
Saunders yanked his hand away with equal anger.
You've lost your senses if you think Lady Carver would care one way or the other. I said leave it alone.
Davin slurred, the wine's effects intensifying his exhaustion. Saunders and Ian shared a glance and the steward resumed his bloody work to its completion without further comment. By the time the last stitch was closed and tied off, Davin's vision swam. He remembered little of the assisted journey to his bedroom, where he had slept alone for uncounted months. Sleep would be but a temporary escape, but when he woke, it would put in place a more permanent escape for Lady Carver and for himself.